Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Cheryl and I love telling stories of Christian women because they have fascinating stories that encourage us, they inspire us. These women are missionaries, musicians, reformers, authors, wives, mothers, and Cheryl, I can't wait for part two
of Mary Ann Aldersey.
Yes.
So,
do tell.
Yes. So we left her just entering Ningpo, China. I really encourage you to listen to episode one, because this is a woman whose life was fraught with delays and detours and opposition, and yet she was so determined. She knew the call on her life.
She certainly did.
You know, I am supposed to go to China. Exactly.
Wavered.
And even during those delays, she was always working toward the goal, which I find amazing, because she was not even able to leave for the mission field till she was 40 years old. But she was undeterred. I'm still going to the mission field. So in the last episode, we talked a little bit about those delays. We talked about a ministry that she did on the island of Java till everything opened up for her to go to China, and the young girls that she mentored. So now she buys a house inside the city of Ningpo. And she is working with Ati and Kit, whose story is told in episode one, and with Mary Leisk. And they make these amazing teachers. And they also are able to help Mary Ann, because she's white. And her Chinese is very broken. So they're able to speak fluently. They're able to kind of coax the mothers and fathers into letting their daughters come in and get an education.
And this is really, when we look at it, this Mary Ann was the first woman missionary to China, wasn't she?
She was. The
but
very first.
To have that support and those with other gifts who could come around her, and that's the teamwork.
That is.
Yeah.
But it is very interesting that she's the first on mainland China, because you've got, you know, Marie Dyer, who is, you know, in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
But the very first on mainland China. And there she is starting a school. And the school is going to be evangelistic, among other things. But this man comes one day and says, you know, I'll give you my daughters if you'll pay for them. And she said, I'll pay for mutton. I'll pay for, you know, vegetables. But I will not pay for a human.
Good.
Absolutely not.
Yes.
So he went away a little distressed. But other families, they gave her their daughters that were diseased or considered slightly demented, that they didn't see as being valuable. But Marie would take any girl that came. And as these girls begin to transform under the tutelage of Ati and Kit and Mary Leisk, more parents were willing to let their daughters go. So first she taught them reading and writing in the Chinese language. Some of them were given English lessons. They also learned skills like sewing and making baskets and other skills that would be useful. They learned theology. She would teach them the Bible. And so the school was thriving. But she said this about it. She said about Ati and Kit, the two dear young converts who have followed me to this country have proved most valuable assistants, not only, or perhaps principally, in the amount of work done for me with reference to the school, but also in gaining for me the confidence of the people, who are still greatly prejudiced against foreigners. Having formed for me a sort of link between the people and myself, they being Chinese and me not adopting the costume of this province. So these women were indispensable. Mary Leisk, she would later say, not only spoke like the natives and understood every shade of the vernacular idiom, she felt with them and thought with them. So
important.
Mary Leisk is just incredible. But about this time, as the girls were, getting older, Mary Ann began to be concerned about these women getting married. So she found Christian husbands for Atti and Kit, and a Christian husband for Mary Leisk, and that was the Reverend William Russell, who became the Bishop of Northern China.
Okay, that had to be a challenge to find three Christian men deep in China that wanted to marry these women.
Yes, but she did.
She did.
She
was rather determined, wasn't she?
She was.
In all things.
Yes, and she loved matchmaking. That became kind of a side thing that she
did. But not for herself.
Nope. But she felt that, isn't that interesting? But she felt that was her responsibility
sure.
to these young girls. I think it's a way of securing their future.
Yes.
So Mary Ann Aldersey was known to walk in the early morning for her health, and she would walk before it was light, and she would carry a lantern. Well, carrying this lantern in the dark in the early morning started all sorts of rumors about her. The residents of Ningpo said she was searching for victims, you know, in the early morning by lamplight.
I could just picture she's such a tiny woman and frail. And the doctor had told her, I don't think you're even going to make it over there on the trip to get to China. And here she is out in the early, early hours.
And listen to this. The women said this. All English children have blue eyes, with which it is, of course, impossible to see. And the strange lady wants to receive our children only that she may pick out their eyes and send them as valuable presents to her friends at home.
Oh.
So there were other rumors that she had massacred the children, that she had eaten the children, and that she was fattening them up because the children were also fed, that she was fattening them up just so that she could eat them. So some of the mothers who had given their daughters to the school began to believe the rumors, and they actually broke into the school and sought to, save their daughters. But when they came into the school and then Marianne let them in, they saw that all the girls were well fed. But then they said, she's feeding them so she can, sell them or eat them. But they saw how they were educated and how clean the facility was. And she said, you can come here any day and, check up on your daughters, check up on me. So it abated somewhat, but the rumors still persisted about Marianne, especially because she kept taking those early morning walks for her health. In 1848, a young woman named San Avong came to live at the school. Now, she had an attitude that you would not believe. There were about 50 girls, and San hated being there and was both rebellious and belligerent. But one day, the Lord touched her heart in such a way that it transformed her immediately. And after that, she became one of Marianne Aldersey's closest allies and companions and an asset to the school. She began to excel at all her studies, and she became a star pupil and later began to be one of the teachers. And she also had another ministry where she would go into the houses of these Chinese women and unbind their feet.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And what was her name again?
Her name was San Avong.
Okay.
And so...
But hadn't damage been done? Or she was going to unbind the feet of women or the children?
I think both.
Yeah.
But years later, Gladys Elward would unbind the feet too. And she had this special massage that would coax the feet back into wholeness, even though they were small. But I guess the binding of the feet kept it constantly painful. So just unbinding it and loosening the feet and giving them a chance to heal. So, interestingly enough, Sav had been betrothed to a grown man since she was 9 years old. And the man was just waiting for her to be educated. So it was time for her to be married. And she was very concerned because her husband-to-be, this grown man, was very much an idolater. So Mary Ann, being Mary Ann, met with the husband-to-be and extracted a written contract from the groom not to force San to worship foreign gods. She was married, but her in-laws were cruel and abusive. Her husband then died in debt, and the family held her responsible for it. And he was older. Yeah. He was like an older guy. So they took her into the temple of the gods, and they forced her down and, you know, sought the gods to see, you know, for her forgiveness. So she was able to escape from that temple and get back to Marianne. And she hid with Marianne. Well, again, the family tried to raid the school because they wanted to sell her for profit. But Marianne, being Marianne, found a wonderful Christian husband for her that would satisfy the family and enter into a contract so that son could continue to serve the Lord and teach the Bible. Marianne had many close calls. And another time, a blind woman came to her wanting to know the gospel. Marianne told her the gospel, but she realized that this poor woman, because of her blindness, could not read. So this inspired Marianne to get the Gospel of Luke in Chinese embossed so this woman could feel the characters, thereby reading the Gospel of Luke in Chinese.
Wow.
However, the blind woman's family was so upset that she was at this school, and they became very, very aggressive, and they charged the school. Marianne and Mary Lesk were forced to escape to the river, where they took a boat to the other side until the mayhem died down. However, later, the blind woman would come back, and she would help Marianne to make copies of the embossed book of Luke and distribute it to the Chinese blind people, whether they were men or women. So this woman ended up having a ministry.
You know, what's interesting is, who was it that was in Japan and it was the Gospel of Luke that was translated into Japanese?
I think it was Lily Kamen.
Yes.
Lillian Kamen, yes.
That's interesting. Luke, for both these Asian countries and cultures, that Luke was the most applicable to them.
Isn't that interesting?
Don't know why.
Maybe it's the parables, because that has more parables than, you know, the stories. Another time, a very rich, an old lady came to the school. She wanted to hear the gospel. She was wrinkled and looked grumpy, but Marianne invited her in for tea and told her the story of Jesus. The woman was 80, and right then she received the Lord. And she said to Marianne, "These Buddhists have just taken and taken and taken and never kept their word to me. And they want all my money, and so does my family." So this woman went down to the bank of the River Yang and made a huge bonfire and burned all her money. Just saying she would live in dependency on Jesus for the rest of her life.
I thought you were saying she went down to the river and got baptized.
No. Yes.
Burned all her money.
So Marianne, even though she lived in China, never took on the Chinese ways. She kept her school very English and very Victorian, and she lived among an English settlement in China. And she became such a strong influence in this British community in Ningpo that it was said even the British Council obeyed her.
Oh, my.
Only once did she wear a Chinese dress, and that was only to protect her from anti-foreign sentiments when she was 60 years old. That was the only time she ever put on the silken garment of the Chinese. She insisted on wearing her Victorian, you know, dresses and teaching these Chinese girls both the English ways.
Right.
So she was westernizing these girls as well as teaching these girls. Now, you remember her friend Maria Tarn Dyer, who had the school in Hong Kong? Well, she died October of 1846. And her two youngest daughters, Barella and Maria, very young then, were sent to England to live with their uncle, Maria Tarn's brother. And they went to a Quaker boarding school, but they were so unhappy. Maria had been born in China. And Maria and Barella felt more Chinese than English, and they really, really could not settle comfortably.
It's so difficult.
In England.
To culturalize, yeah.
In the meantime, Marianne had begun to write to them, and they kept up a correspondence. And Marianne invited them to come back to China, live with her, to be teachers. So Barilla and Maria Tarn both took teacher training classes. Now, Barilla was older than Maria, so she was 18, and Maria was about 16 when they returned to China and worked with Marianne as teachers at the school. Now, as
matchmaking
they were
making coming up,
well, it is and it's not. It's a
twist in the story.
Yes, here comes the twist. So, a suitable man that Marianne approved of, you know, came another missionary for Barilla Dyer. However, in 1858, Marie's about 21. This Englishman comes to China, and he does not fit in with the missionary society. He thinks they're too Victorian, that they're too English, and that they need to build a bridge to the Chinese. So this man begins to dress like the Chinese, and he learns the Chinese language, and he begins to preach to the Chinese, dressed as a Chinese. He grows his hair out to this ponytail, yes. And he takes on the Chinese culture, eating as the Chinese, living at as the Chinese, and living among the Chinese. Well, Maria falls deeply in love with this unsuitable Englishman named Hudson Taylor.
Yes.
She falls desperately in love with him. And Marianne thoroughly disapproves. She disapproves because of the way he dresses. She disapproves because
amazing.
He never finished his academic degree in England. He was studied to be a medical doctor. So she sees no means of support or, you know, how he's going to, you know, work in China. And he had even resigned from the Chinese Evangelistic Society. Now, mind you, Marianne never was associated
exactly
with a missionary society, albeit she would ask money and receive donations from the London Missionary Society because of her connections. And from the time she started the school almost to the end, she was always asking them for money. The school cost in what is today, you know, the amount of money would be about $10,000 a year, which isn't much. But she didn't have that money.
Yes.
So she was always asking them to supplement it. So this is what she said about Hudson Taylor. "Mr. Taylor, that young, poor, unconnected nobody, how dare he presume to think such a thing? Of course the proposal must be refused at once, and that finally." So she kiboshed Hudson Taylor's proposal to Maria.
Oh.
So Hudson Taylor began to pray and said, "Lord, if this isn't your will, then I accept it. But if it is your will, show us a way." So in the meantime, Maria was so lovesick that she decided to write to her uncle and her aunt in England because they were the legal guardians of Maria and Barilla. So she wrote to them because even though Marianne was friends with Maria, and even though she had Maria's girls, she was not their legal guardian like she had been of Mary Lice.
She was just the hostess.
So Hudson Taylor also wrote to the Tarns living in England. In the meantime, Hudson Taylor was considered by Miss Aldersey as totally unacceptable as a match for Maria, whom she wrongly considered her ward. She put up determined resistance to their growing romance, only finally being overwhelmed by a letter from Maria's
true guardians.
I'm trying to find the rest of this quote. Guardians, the Tarns, that they approved the match, though not without gentle criticism of the two young lovers and of Miss Aldersey and her supporters. So there's a little bit of a rebuke in there to everybody for letting it get to this place.
Right. But here's Marianne who, nope, I'm not part of a mission society. Nope,
right.
You can't tell me I can't go to China. Nope. This rogue thing, She went that path and now he can't?
Right. And look, she's been absolutely amazing to this point.
Yes.
Determined. And she's done all this wonderful matchmaking, setting up the school. But here's her fatal flaw. She does not like Hudson Taylor at all. Says Maria's going to die with him. Maria's never going to be anything. Hudson Taylor will never amount to anything, which we know is not true. But on another podcast, the podcast that also deals with Maria Tarn, we're going to also talk about Maria Dyer Taylor, because she does indeed marry Hudson Taylor. So soon after Maria married, Marianne became weaker and weaker. But she said, now she's in her 60s, she said, my weakness is my strength. I have to live by rule, and so I keep well. So she was very disciplined in her diet, very disciplined in her walking and exercise and in her sleep patterns, everything, in order to maintain her health.
Yeah.
Now, all the teachers at her school were now Chinese, and the school was always brimming with pupils. So she decided to give the school over to the American Presbyterian Mission. At the same time, she kept in touch with her nieces and nephews and her brother, and most of them had migrated to Australia. And they were very concerned for their aunt, knowing her health, knowing how it really was not a safe situation. Yeah. And there were tensions, anti-foreign tensions growing again in China. Mm-hmm. And they begged her to come to Australia to live with them. So she boarded a boat and she left for Australia, settling in Adelaide, just outside the city. And she had a house and she named it Tsongau because that was a province near Ningpo that she had really loved and really admired. Mm. So in 1861 or 62, news reached her that her school had been burned down and her girls scattered by the rebels. However, within 6 months, the British Army restored order, her girls all returned safely, and the Church Missionary Society rebuilt the school and ran it.
Wow.
So Marianne, even in Australia, continued to minister to the sick and needy until she died September 30th, 1868. And that's the story of Mary Aldersey. And again, I had read about her. Hudson Taylor mentions her quite a bit in his story. And in biographies of Hudson Taylor, Marianne Aldersey is mentioned not in a good light. And Hudson Taylor really talks about his courtship with Maria and the opposition, the cruel opposition, the mean opposition.
Interesting.
Marianne did her best.
She was determined throughout her whole life. Determined,
right.
determined.
And even when she had it wrong, she was still determined to stop this this loving couple from getting married. But she
God's
failed.
Purpose prevails.
It did. And I love that Hudson Taylor and Maria were really praying and praying and praying. But she was still loved. She was loved by her wards.
Yes.
And that was why it was a struggle for Maria, because she actually really, really loved Marianne Aldersey. So to choose between Marianne Aldersey, who she absolutely loved, who was a friend of her mother's, and Hudson Taylor, who dressed like the Chinese, it was quite a hard decision. But in the end, after praying about it, she married Hudson Taylor.
Well, I'm glad you're going to do an episode on her.
Oh, she's fascinating. She's so sweet.
Imagine.
We'll probably throw in Jenny Taylor at the same time to that episode. I can hit three at one.
Yes, you can.
We'll see.
Isn't it interesting how really we're in life, sometimes your strength can also be a flaw, but God can pour grace on all of it.
And I think that's such a great lesson to leave this podcast with, that she wasn't perfect And yet God used her and her determination
Absolutely.
In such a great way.
Amen.
Amen. I love it.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@CCCM.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.